Hey everybody, welcome back to the Montana Moves and Meals Well Chat. This is episode 7. I'm Neil Andrews. I'm the exercise and fitness specialist for the Montana University System Wellness Program. And we have we've been on a little hiatus as far as podcasts go. We haven't published anything for a while, so we're glad to be back. We've had a busy fall. I've been on the road for most of September and October, traveling around to all our MUS locations for fall well checks and some wellness workshops and education. And then, as most of you know, my coworker, our nutrition expert and dietitian Kristen Stokes, she had a baby in October, and so she has been on maternity leave, and she'll be coming back to us in January. So we've been pretty busy, and so we apologize for the lack of podcast over the past couple of months, but we're looking forward to getting some new ones published, including this one. And you get a special bonus treat today, because the one you're going to listen to today, we actually recorded on, I believe, October 2nd, and it happened to be only a couple of days before Kristen's due date. We wanted to get some last minute work out of her, and then she ended up having a baby a couple of days later on October 4th. And Kristen and baby are doing well. They are, of course, she's enjoying some time off, and you know, staying up late nights and doing all the stuff you do with a new baby. But Kristen and family are doing well. The baby's name is Harrison, and we posted a picture of Harrison on our blog a few days after he was born. So if you want to see Harrison, if you haven't seen Harrison, he's up on MontanaMovesAndMeals.com. So before we kind of backtrack and let you listen to that podcast, I did have a few announcements for those of you who are participants in our wellness program. We have some fresh challenges that just came out on our incentive site. Some came out today, some came out last week. One of our favorites is our annual Share Your Story, and we've already got some of those coming in this morning. But there's a few things, you know, we try to change up a lot of our challenges every year, but there are a few traditions that we have. And some of those traditions are, we usually ask people, you know, around New Year's to do some goal setting for the year. That's something Kristen and I practice as well. Something that kind of focuses us for the year. We have professional goals, we have personal goals, we have physical goals. I have some of my goals that are up on my wall right behind me, and I like to check those goals off as I hit them throughout the year. And this year's been I've had a good year. I'm happy to say, as far as hitting some of these big goals that I had for myself. So I'm going to submit a Share Your Success Story and post it on our blog pretty soon. But those are pouring in. If you've had something that you're proud about, or some, you know, something that you set a goal for, or maybe you didn't set a goal for it, maybe you just had a nice accomplishment, or had, you know, it could be some good numbers at well check, or, you know, maybe you did an event for the first time that you've never done. Maybe you set a personal record, and it, from the very big to, you know, the small things too. We like to celebrate the small successes too. So don't think your success is, you know, not good enough to share with us, because we love reading those. Also, if you're participating in our incentive program, couple of deadlines if you are earning those incentives. One, our challenges for the 2017 year are ending on December 10th, and you'll have the rest of that week to kind of finalize those last minute notes and points. And then on December 25th, if you've earned a gift card through the incentive program, that is the deadline to redeem that card. You don't have to use it, but you have to redeem it by Christmas Day. And then if you have earned a Fitbit through the incentive program, you have to the end of the year, December 31st, New Year's Eve, to redeem that Fitbit code. So that's all the housekeeping items I have. Thanks for participating, if you're participating with us. It's almost Thanksgiving. It's the week of Thanksgiving, so I'd like to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone that's listening out there. And let's go back in time about 6 weeks, and we're going to hear a podcast from Kristen, again, a couple of days before she had her baby, and I think this is a good subject, whether you're pregnant or not, but I think maybe she was a little bit inspired by her pregnancy. She is talking about some truths and myths to good old late night eating. A lot of people have a lot of opinions about eating past a certain time at night. So in episode 7 of the Well Chat, here we go, back in time, back with Kristen and talking about some late night eating. This is episode 7, and we are very fortunate today to have with us, as we usually have with us, Ms. Kristen Stokes, the registered dietitian for the MUS Wellness Program. And Kristen, this is a special day. It is your due day to have a baby.
It is, but so, I am still here.
She's still here. We are milking Kristen, no pun intended, for everything she's worth here. We want to get all the talent out of her that we can before she takes 12 weeks off and basically says hasta la vista until 2018, right?
That's
so
right.
Enjoy this, but you still have 13 hours left of your due date in case you want to have a baby today. In fact, there's a good chance that as you're listening to this, Kristen may have already had her baby, and we'll keep you updated on that. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I think baby's not going to arrive for a while.
Yeah, and you felt that way for at least a couple of weeks, that the baby's staying in and baby's comfortable and he likes
He's
it.
He's content in there.
Yeah, he likes it in there.
Yes, but that being said, you never know. And I did want to do a podcast before leaving that was nutrition focused, since in my absence, it will be Neil talking about exercise and other general wellness topics.
Yeah, you guys are going to get a lot of exercise, fitness, and other related non-nutrition wellness topics for the next 3 months. So you're going to get sick of me. So we're trying to make you be sick of Kristen before she has a baby.
Yes.
So being 40 weeks pregnant, being at your due date, what you're talking about today, was that, did you inspire yourself? Like, I need to talk about late night eating.
Yes, actually. I was reflecting upon my pregnancy, which has been actually very, very easy. I'm very fortunate. Aside from first trimester.
I was like, you weren't saying that at the beginning.
No, once
you're like, this kind of
this is horrible.
I won't say.
Once morning sickness passed around 14 or 15 weeks, since then it has been easy and I have felt great. So feeling fortunate about that fact. But as I was reflecting, I was thinking about how some of my habits have changed during pregnancy related to exercise and eating and overall wellness. And one of the things that I had thought about nutrition-wise was an increase in the amount of eating that I do later in the day, especially at night, like a bedtime snack, or even actually getting up in the middle of the night to eat. But probably not the best habit, but something that has happened during my pregnancy.
So like the midnight
snack.
Refrigerator raid, rustling around, foraging, as my family likes to call it.
Foraging, midnight foraging. Yes, exactly. So I wanted to talk about that. And actually, the other thing that made me think of this topic was the webinar that I did a couple of weeks ago about nutrition for healthy aging. And I was talking about habits of people living in blue zones, which are areas in the world where there's a high percentage of people living over 100 years old. And one of the things that they have observed in those populations is that many of those people have their most of their caloric intake at the beginning of the day or earlier in the day. So they're pretty light eaters at night, which is interesting. So I was thinking about both that and the fact that that is not my habit, right, these days at 40 weeks pregnant. So I wanted
It's probably not a lot of people's habit. Just in our culture, where a lot of us are such in a hurry in the morning with getting to work, and maybe you're getting your kids out the door. Morning times can be very, very hectic. And so I'm sure that's not uncommon in our American culture, like, you know, grab something and go if you're lucky, you know what I mean?
Yes. And we do have our emphasis on dinner, mm-hmm. just in our culture. It's not the, you know, big noontime meal that some other cultures focus on. So,
but then they get to, like, some of those cultures, then they get to go take a nap.
Lucky.
Are there blue zones in Spain?
No, not in Spain.
Okay.
Greece.
In Greece, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I'm kind of blanking. Oh, in Italy as well, but.
And I'm glad you're following up on this, because if you missed Kristen's webinar, it is, you can check it out on any of our video links. It's up on our video site, which if you go to our main wellness website or montanamovesandmeals.com, you can link out to that and catch that video, because that was a lot. I know there was a lot of information in that webinar.
Yes.
And there are some things you just got to touch on, blue zones being one of them, which is a very interesting subject. I think something that probably most people haven't heard of, but you're starting to hear more and more about these blue zones and why people live a long time in those zones.
But I was also looking just online to start with and noticed a lot of sites, probably more fitness-related sites, popular media sites that, you know, claim calories eaten after 7 or 8 p.m. turn directly to fat, and, you know, whatever you do, don't eat late at night. And I was trying to look at the actual research, and it turns out that the research is still very much undecided.
So where do you think that comes from? Because that is one of those, you know, things that people hear, but is there any, like, science behind it? Was there, like, a particular study that came that where that comes
where that came from?
You know, or now, like, that it is in the popular culture where, you know, you hear, oh, if you eat something after 8 p.m., you know, it's bad for you.
There was one study in particular that was looking at how our bodies burn fats versus carbs later at night, and I think some of it is based off of that. But I don't know of anything beyond if there was one defining study that really made people think that. However, a lot of the studies look at shift workers, so people who are working later at night, so they're eating at night, and that in itself has some problems because their sleep schedule is disrupted.
Totally different,
and that in itself can play into appetite. So we've seen that people who don't get good quality sleep or have sleep schedules that maybe don't line up with our natural biological clock can have there's some big implications to that in terms of health and appetite in particular. A lot of these studies also look at night eating syndrome, which is different than just, hey, I eat a lot at dinner, or, you know, I have a big bedtime snack. Night eating syndrome is actually technically an eating disorder, defined as eating more than a quarter of your calories after supper or waking three or more times per week to eat. And they've found that's related to serotonin levels. And so that's a little different than, again, what we're talking about here. Or the studies are just observational. So it's hard to really get research about this.
Do they know if that's controlled. If that's a cause or effect? Like, am I waking up or am I eating at night because I can't sleep, or can I not sleep because I keep eating? As far as like the serotonin.
I don't know. And I think that has some the particular night eating syndrome that's related to. I think that's multifactorial. That's a little more complicated. But in general, when we're talking about this, we're talking about just, again, having more of our calories later in the day. And they have found that large meals at night, increased risk of weight gain, obesity, some metabolic changes that they've seen. But that is not to say that all of the research agrees. There's actually a lot out there, too, that says it doesn't matter what time. It depends on the population. If you're healthy otherwise, then maybe it doesn't matter so much. So, again, one of those nutrition topics that doesn't have a consensus yet. However, in general, I think we can say some things about eating late at night. The first is that it can disrupt sleep quality. And that means if you're not getting that high quality sleep for enough hours of the night, then that can really disrupt two hormones that control appetite, and that's leptin and ghrelin. And I'm not going to go too far into those right now, but those are pretty strong appetite controllers. And so when we don't get enough sleep, that in itself can be a problem. Also, eating late at night can cause us to be less hungry in the morning and therefore less likely to eat breakfast. So it may not just be that you're rushing out of the house, as Neil talked about, but it may be that, wow, you ate way too much at night and you are still not hungry. Yet we know that there's some big benefits of eating breakfast. Improved concentration, more energy throughout the day, and then eating breakfast just in and of itself has been linked to weight control and appetite control throughout the day. So they've shown that people who skip breakfast have a harder time controlling appetite later at night, and then you just get stuck in a cycle. Eating late at night also, if you think about what foods you're generally choosing at, say, 10 p.m., tend to be snacks of poor nutritional quality. And a lot of people, they're eating mindlessly in front of the TV as well. So if we compare our nighttime snacks to a snack, say, at 10 o'clock in the morning, usually our nighttime snacks are much higher calorie, higher carb, higher sugar, not as good for us. And then lastly, eating late at night, this is related, but our appetite for sweets and starchy foods and salty foods actually has been shown to peak around 8 p.m. So it's much easier to overeat at night. So not just the nutritional quality, but the overall amount as well tends to be higher at night. And that is due to, again, that hormone ghrelin. There's natural fluctuations in the levels of that related to our circadian rhythm.
So I had an episode this weekend of mindless eating in front of the TV.
It happens.
Yeah. My wife was in a show this weekend. She's an actress. And so I was watching, my boys were in bed, and so it was just me. And there was a movie on TV that I liked, and I cooked a bunch of popcorn on the stovetop the real way, no microwave stuff. But it turned out to be just a gang of popcorn. I filled this humongous bowl, and I thought about, you've referenced a popcorn study before where people just eat, you know, the amount they're given, like if they have it and they're
if it's in front of them,
they eat it. And man, that was me. I just destroyed that big bowl of popcorn. And my one, I guess, thing that made me feel better is at least it was like low calorie food. But I went through that popcorn.
Popcorn it's a good snack, I think, because it is lower in calories and higher in fiber, and you can eat a lot more of it. because of that. So not a bad choice, but it does happen, I think, to all of us. So a few tips that I have if this is really speaking to you, that, oh man, every night, yeah, after dinner, like, this is a problem. This is when all of my poor nutrition choices come into play. So a couple things. First of all, I think identifying whether it's a habit or whether it's true hunger. So you might actually be hungry. And if that's the case, trying to shift some of your calories to earlier in the day. So actually eating breakfast, having some substantial snacks throughout the day, eating lunch, and then having a good dinner, see what it actually does for your hunger later at night. If you're trying to restrict calories throughout the day, then it might be almost inevitable that you binge at night because you're actually hungry. So again, making sure that you're getting enough calories throughout the day can be really important. If it's habit, which probably tends to be the case for many of us, a couple things there. First of all is stress management. So many of us are eating because we've had a long day. We're finally now sitting, relaxing in front of the TV. And this is also a nice, you know, many of us eat out of, okay, I'm finally, again, sitting here and just eating because it feels good. So if that's the case, thinking about some other stress management techniques. So taking a walk, taking a warm bath, reading an enjoyable book, or doing a hobby, maybe some meditation or stretching, things like that, that are much more beneficial to our health than sitting and eating some snacks. Also, switching up your routine can be a big thing. If it's just strictly a habit of, okay, after dinner, a little bit of time, now I'm going to grab a bag of chips and watch my favorite TV show. If we switch that up a little bit, you may notice that you're not actually craving those foods or you're not actually hungry. Identifying triggers. So keeping some kind of diary, it can be short and sweet, but noticing, wow, when I am really stressed out or when I am upset emotionally, then the night eating really comes into play. Just knowing that, then you can strategize around that. Finally, the most helpful tip I would say, at least for me, but it depends on you and knowing yourself, but maybe having a structured post-dinner snack. If this is a habit and it's hard to break, having a structured post-dinner snack not in front of the TV can go a long ways. And in fact, there was a study that they did that they gave participants this choice, and they showed that people decreased their total calorie intake, especially in the evening, when they knew that they could have that snack before bed. So rather than trying, probably unsuccessfully, to keep from eating before bed, if they knew going into even dinner that they were going to have a nice bedtime snack, then they actually ate less at dinner, ate less throughout the evening. The key here, though, is that it was a small snack. It was about 150 to 200 calories.
So it's already planned.
It's already planned. Okay. Yep. And it was nutritious. So it wasn't just a cookie or a bowl of ice cream. It was something that had some protein in it, some fiber. So maybe things like hummus and veggies or Greek yogurt or trail mix. Those were the kinds of choices that they were given. And that was really beneficial.
So maybe this is something that I could try, because you were talking about, you know, things like cookies and ice cream, sweet things. For me personally, I find that when I can't wait for your reaction to this, but seriously, like, if I eat a very healthy dinner. Let's say I make a my plate meal, which is one of your Montana Meals challenges for you guys that are participating in our incentive program. So I have some lean protein. I have, let's say I grilled some veggies or sauteed some vegetables, which is one of my favorite things. And I have you know, a pretty nutritious meal. And I also find that like maybe I have a salad, you know, and the more vegetables or, you know, things that you talk about a lot, nutrient dense, but calorically less, I find that I am more likely later after dinner to crave specifically sweets. And that is when I will go get the ice cream. Ice cream is that's my nemesis as far as, you know, post-dinner high caloric food. But I find that there might be a link for me between like how healthy my dinner is and then if I want specifically something sweet. So can you coach me on that a little bit?
I think that's common and not altogether harmful. I would say, I think there's a term for that. Actually, it's some kind of psychology term. But regardless, it's a form of, I think, compensation where you're, you know, if you have this healthy meal, then you almost deserve, you kind of earned.
Earned the treat.
I
will have a sweet craving. And anyone who's had a craving for sweets, you know, knows what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, okay. So
it's difficult.
So two things. Make sure that even though it's a healthy meal, you're still getting enough to eat. So not that you're stuffed and full and, you know, overeat, but making sure that you have enough calories to feel satisfied. Because sometimes if it is a meal that maybe there's not, you know, there's a salad and not quite enough to it, then you're hungry later. So I think there's an element of that. And then also you can think about portion size on your ice cream. So maybe not avoiding it altogether, but portioning it out. You're not eating from the container. It's a small portion controlled amount. And then also thinking about, okay, if I am craving sweets, is there something a little more nutritious that I could have that isn't, you said ice cream is your thing.
That's my go-to.
So, yeah. So maybe if there's something else that you could, that would still satisfy that sweet tooth without just going totally overboard.
Okay.
I would explore some other options and see if there's something that could satisfy that sweet tooth without leading to a
And I like your idea of like binge. Of the planning. So maybe something like some Greek yogurt with some fruit.
Yeah.
And then I'm getting the protein. And
absolutely. Like Greek yogurt with a little fruit, maybe even a few dark chocolate chips.
Yes.
Something like that.
This is why she's my favorite dietitian.
Where again, you're getting some nutrition, but you're also, you know, feeling good, feeling satisfied. Does that help, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
I like the structure of it. I like the idea of planning it just like you would plan your, you know, what am I having for dinner tonight? That, you know, we answer that question every day. What's for dinner tonight? But how many people say, what's for post
dinner
snack? You know, we don't do that. We just, you know, we feel like, and then we go for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And this goes back to knowing yourself. Maybe, you know, maybe post dinner snacks aren't even an issue for you. But if this is something that you know, this is when you crave sweets, this is when you crave a little more food, then having that, planning it, having that structure is important, I think. Also keeping, I've talked about this, I think even on the podcast before, but keeping some of those trigger foods either out of sight
or
even better, out of
them.
The house. Yep. again, with knowing that we as humans typically crave those foods a little bit later at night than, you know, if we're trying to rely on willpower, it's awfully difficult mm-hmm. sometimes. So in general, my recommendation for all of this really is to listen to hunger cues. So determining whether you're really hungry or if this is a habit. Most of us do best eating every 3 to 4 hours during wake time, and then stopping before bed so that we can get some good quality sleep, give your body some time to digest before you crawl into bed. And then when you are hungry and you need that nighttime snack, choosing something nutritious and small to see if that will satisfy you first, that can go a long ways.
Awesome. That's, thanks, Kristen.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Excellent. So we're wishing you the best of luck with a healthy delivery, and
thank you.
Looking forward to meeting that baby boy and finding out what the name is. Do you know what the name is yet?
No.
She's a liar. She lies.
No, I am not lying. My husband and I have two names, and we have decided that we need to meet the baby first.
Okay. And the baby's going to come out and say, "Hi, I'm Daniel."
So-and-so.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh.